Hello, my name is Ben Jenkins and welcome to the ACN podcast. On today's episode, I interview Dr. Helen Haynes, a highly experienced nurse and midwife who, as of last year's federal election, has made the transition into politics. So it's wanted to keep in mind that this episode was recorded right at the beginning of the year. This was before any of the bushfires, which definitely affected Dr. Haynes' district of Indo down in Victoria, and is before everything that's happening now, the coronavirus. So I hope you guys enjoy this awesome insight into what Dr. Haynes has had with her career, especially that transition into politics. I hope you enjoy. Hello, my name is Ben Jenkins and welcome to the ACN podcast, the official podcast of the Australian College of Nursing. Today I'm joined by Dr. Helen Haynes. For more than 32 years, Dr. Haynes has been a registered nurse and midwife, spending the majority of her time working in rural northeast Victoria. But on the 18th of May 2019, Dr. Haynes' career had taken an exciting yet different direction, being elected as the member of INDI during the 2019 federal election. I'm excited to learn more about Dr. Haynes' progression from nursing and midwifery into being a member of parliament and to shine a light on Dr. Haynes' incredible career. So Dr. Helen Haynes, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Ben, and hello to all the listeners, whoever you may be.
So Helen, to start with today, I just want to start by reading a direct quote, which has come from your bio on the Voices for INDI page, which was published during the time that you're running for your seat of INDI. The quote goes, "The skills I have gained as a midwife and nurse, empathy, a listening ear, compassion, and a no-nonsense work ethic are the same ones I would bring to this job. My track record demonstrates that I can stay the course and deliver for our community." Now, Helen, what's immediately noticeable is your love and commitment to your community. And as the quote suggests, your career as a nurse and midwife has provided an enormity of skills and life experiences, which is aiding in your position now as a member of parliament. So I'd love to start by talking about your nursing and midwifery career. So you've grown up in regional Victoria, you've done your nursing and midwifery training, and have moved back to Wangaratta, where you've spent the vast majority of your career working in rural northeast Victoria. My first question is, was it always your plan to move back to rural Victoria to practice? And looking back on it now, all these years later, did you ever see yourself spending so much time within regional settings?
Well, gosh, Ben, you know, I don't know that I had a plan when I was first starting out as a nurse and a midwife. I think what the evidence shows us, though, that if a person grows up in a rural community, the likelihood of them returning to practice as a health professional of any stripe actually is reasonably high. And when I think about it in terms of the work that we've done across the nation to try to build the rural health workforce, that is the thing that we know, that if we encourage young people from a rural background to take on a discipline such as nursing, midwifery, medicine, OT or physio or any of the allied health professions, the likelihood of them coming back is much stronger than attracting somebody from the city to come and work in rural. So I guess based on the evidence, it's not surprising that's where I ended up. But, you know, I was jolly pleased that I did. I've always found that living and working in rural communities offers opportunities that perhaps I wouldn't have taken up if I was in the city. You know, I've always had this approach that there's probably someone much more qualified or much more talented than me in a big population. And in a small population, you know that if it's not you, then who? So, maybe that's been an advantage to me, I think.
And throughout your career, because you've spent such a large amount of your career working in regional settings, what have you found to be some of the greatest challenges of caring for patients in the setting?
Yeah. Look, again, I would say that probably one of the strongest reasons I've remained in working in a rural community is that word community. Like many people, whether you live in the suburbs or whether you live in a country town or out on a farm, when you have a family, as I've had, and your kids start going to the local school, you become embedded in a community. And that's exactly what happened to me. You know, I got involved with the local school and the sporting clubs and, in the hospital where I worked and so on. So, you know, it became a very major part of my life and became hard to leave. But I suppose in terms of the challenges of working rural, the greatest challenge is undoubtedly access to services. If a person presents with a complicated disorder and they need specialist care, then there's, you know, long amounts of travel involved with them going to a tertiary centre in a city. And time is health in many ways, and certainly people who present with, you know, life-threatening issues such as stroke or, you know, a coronary vascular issue of any sort, or indeed some of the more common cancers, that it's more difficult for them to access specialist services. So that is indeed a challenge. And for many people, that challenge is too great, that for people to leave their community and spend long periods of time in a city setting is sometimes too expensive or indeed too alienating. So many people, in fact, don't choose the treatment that they really need because of the distance.
Now, if we had any nurses or midwives who are considering moving to a regional setting, maybe that they're doing it for a short stint, or maybe they want to start their career within a regional setting, but they have never worked there before, what sort of advice would you provide to them?
Oh, I'd say definitely do it. You know, again, the opportunities to practice to the full extent of your skills are really there in a rural community. There's no doubt in my mind that I would not have taken the pathways that I've taken if I lived in the city. I just know I wouldn't have. Because I needed extra skills, I went out and got them. It became obvious to me when I was practicing as a midwife that the standard care of hospital-based antenatal clinic and hospital-based birthing was not the optimal way a woman could get the best possible care. And again, it was that question, if not me, then who? So, you know, together with some colleagues, we began what is now the longest running rural caseload midwifery practice in Australia. That was back in the early 90s. I know that I probably wouldn't have done that if I was in the city. I would have assumed someone else was going to do it. And I think from that point, that really opened my eyes in doing something like that, in again, having a look at the international evidence, having a look at what was going on in my rural community, knowing that women would benefit from continuity of care, and then getting on and creating such a model of care. Probably one of the career highlights for me, working closely with other midwives, working closely with the women themselves and the hospital administrators, and setting up that group practice was, I think, really formative for me. And again, I would say to nurses and midwives who are contemplating moving to a rural area, have a go, because you know you'll find gaps, you'll find opportunities, and you'll know that you can be brave enough actually to take on those opportunities, and perhaps you may not do that in a bigger metropolitan tertiary setting.
Now, Helen, you've had a successful academic career, and I think that would be a bit of an understatement to say. You've completed your PhD in medical science from Uppsala University in Sweden, with a focus on reproductive health. You've been a postdoctoral fellow at the Karolinska Institute, a senior research fellow at the Rural Health Academic Network at the University of Melbourne. Now, I'm just interested in learning about the initial catalyst that's taken you from a registered nurse and midwife in regional Victoria to then commencing research. And from this experience, what advice would you give to nurses looking at doing the same?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, Ben. You know, it's, again, I think, for me, everything has been a progression, I suppose, and that caseload midwifery group practice that I just spoke of, it became abundantly clear to me that there were so many public health issues that women and their families faced, and that midwives were really at the coalface of being public health practitioners if they really practiced to the full extent of their skills. So for me, I realised there was a gap in my knowledge, and I guess I was a bit frustrated at always being that, you know, that ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, when in fact we need an ambulance at the top of the cliff. So I took on some further study and did a master's in public health, and that really opened the whole world to me. In doing that, I really found that I enjoyed things like statistics and epidemiology, and that was a complete surprise. I know, people still laugh, but you must be crazy, but, you know, I enjoyed that. And I guess that then led me to interrogating the evidence with a lot more knowledge and passion. And in doing that, I realised that I didn't only want to be someone who was a consumer of research, that I wanted to learn more about research and potentially contribute to the evidence base. So from there, that led me to thinking about taking on further study through a PhD. And again, I was, you know, I lived in a small rural community a long way from a major university. So that seemed all rather tricky. And I had a young family too as at the time. But anyway, you know, you find a way, don't you? And for me, that way was in contacting some researchers at Uppsala University after I'd read a paper that was produced there. And I had a bit of a chat to those people via email and found myself, in fact, going across to Uppsala and undertaking some of my MPH over there. And, you know, one thing led to another. I got to know a lot of people and they eventually invited me to come back and do a PhD with them, which eventually I did. So that, again, I would say to any nurse who thinks, or any midwife who thinks, oh, gosh, here I am translating evidence into practice. At least I hope nurses and midwives are doing that. maybe I can contribute to the evidence base too. And it doesn't need to be in a PhD, of course. Nurses and midwives have been providing evidence for a couple of centuries, actually. And, of course, we know our most early scientist was Florence Nightingale, and her work was extraordinary. And a great inspiration to me, and I think to many others, that we're keen observers, midwives and nurses, and, you know, that's the basic tenet of good science is to be a keen observer and to document it, to look at patterns, to look at changes, and to try to understand causes. So I think any nurse or midwife could take that a step further and formalise it into research, and it's so satisfying, and I've found it so satisfying to be working internationally and to learn from key mentors in all across the world, but most particularly for me in Sweden.
I just think it's incredible just how far a nursing and midwifery career can take someone as well.
Me too. You know, I encourage so many people to think about a career in nursing or midwifery because there are so many careers within it, aren't there? You know, you can work rural and remote as I've done and many others have done. You can work internationally. You can work in a major tertiary hospital. You can be a teacher. You can be a researcher. Mm. You can be a coalface clinician. You know, you can work in so many settings. I think you can get tired of one setting and change to another and regroup and refocus. I think it's a brilliant career. And I've found it's really given me the skills I've needed in so many settings outside of nursing and midwifery too.
So let's start talking about your current role and your transition into politics. As I mentioned in the introduction, you assumed office as a member of INDAI in May 2019 during the federal election. Yeah. My first question is, what inspired you to run for parliament?
Well, I was inspired by the woman who was the member for INDAI before me, Cathy McGowan, and I was inspired by the extraordinary community movement that saw Cathy elected in 2013. I think that prior to that election, I took a bit of a back seat in terms of my engagement with our democracy, and I thought it was for other people, really. I thought that my responsibility really was just to turn up on election day and vote, of course, with good information and with a strong conscience. But I kind of thought that's where it ended. But in fact, what I learnt during that time in 2013, when INDAI went from being a very safe coalition seat to becoming a marginal seat and voting an independent for the very first time in its history, and it's a federation seat, so it's a long history. And I got engaged in that movement with my whole family and with my community, and I realised that democracy is something that you need to cherish. And so I guess I became pretty engaged at that point. But I didn't see myself as becoming the next member for INDAI, that's for sure. And that wasn't until, of course, Cathy had two terms and then it became clear that she wasn't going to run again, and our community was asking the question, well, will we let this go? Will we just say, we'll hand this back to the major parties, or should someone else put their hand up and offer themselves as a community independent? So, well, I guess history shows that I did put my hand up. But even so, even in doing that, I knew that I would give it everything I had, but if I wasn't successful, that was okay too, because I hadn't spent my whole life wanting to be a politician. But I did it really as a, I guess, because I saw what value an independent Member of Parliament can have for their own community, how much they can take the voices of the people on the ground into the House of Representatives and provide another way, really, something, an alternative to a major party view.
Now, coming into this position as well, you would have had an idea of the impact that you would like to make. And I'm interested now that you're a few months into your role, what have you found to be some of the challenges and some of the rewarding aspects of your new position?
Well, there are many, many challenges. But firstly, I would say that it is one of the most fascinating jobs I've ever had, and I've had a few jobs now. If you have a live desire for learning and a strong curiosity factor, then I would recommend taking on a position like this, because there's so much to learn. And you have to be across such a wide variety of subject matter. So I've been learning rapidly. I think one of the great challenges, of course, being an independent Member of Parliament, is that I need to make a decision on every single piece of legislation that comes before the House. So I need to be aware of what's going on. I need to understand that legislation and come up with a position on it. And that's super challenging. But, you know, I have a decision-making matrix that I apply to that. And again, my training, I think my academic training has really helped me to understand what makes for good evidence and what looks like bias. So that's been really helpful. And being a community independent and coming from the stable of INDI, one of the key factors that we talk about in INDI is a values-based proposition that we should try to approach politics with key values of respect and inclusion and honesty and transparency with strong ethics. So I have to apply that ethical framework over every decision I make too. And again, when I think about my backstory as a nurse and a midwife, that's what we try to do, isn't it? You know, that we try to take an ethical standpoint on our practice. I guess the other thing I would say is, coming from a nursing and midwifery background, I'm very used to being an advocate. So I think that's very useful as a Member of Parliament, because often I need to advocate on behalf of individual constituents on multiple issues, actually, from immigration to superannuation to problems with Centrelink and NDIS and all sorts of individual issues that I need to advocate to government for. Did that answer the question? I think I've almost forgotten the question.
No, it did. It did. Some of the challenges and the rewarding aspects of working in your position, which you certainly have.
Yeah, so those challenges are exactly that, to be across so many pieces of information. I think the other challenge, of course, is understanding the process of Parliament and how legislation is made. That's a steep learning curve, and many parliamentarians come from a legal background, which I think would be rather useful. But I don't have that background, so I've had to learn a lot. I keep a lot of textbooks handy, and I also ask lots of questions of my colleagues, and I'm really fortunate. On the crossbench in the House of Representatives are some most excellent people, and some most excellent people who've had years of experience, people like Andrew Wilkie and Adam Bandt and Rebecca Sharkey. Are there, and it's marvellous to be able to just turn around and ask them a question if I'm uncertain about what to do. And of course, you know, I'm joined by another new independent, Zali Stegall, and it's great to have a colleague who's an independent and brand new like myself. So, you know, those challenges can be met as we would meet them in any walk of life, by asking questions, by collaborating. The Parliamentary Library is also a most excellent resource for a new parliamentarian. I can go to the library with just about any question on any subject matter, and there's over 100 researchers there at the disposal of MPs. So what a fantastic resource, really.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess the rewards, I would say the rewards very much at present, again, on those individual constituent issues. And my office has worked really hard in the last 6 months and had some fantastic results in helping people with, mainly with things like NDIS, actually. We've been able to advocate very well on some key issues there.
Now, Helen, you're a living example of what you can achieve from being a registered nurse and then moving into becoming an MP. What sort of advice would you provide to someone that's wanting to do the similar sort of role as you with what you've learned over the last few months?
Yeah, look, surround yourself with people who can support you. And again, if you are considering a political life, then I think make sure that you've made a really informed decision about whether you're going to do that as running as a candidate with a major party, or whether you're going to do as I've done and my predecessor Cathy McGowan did, and that's to run as an independent. So I guess I can't speak much of what it would be like to run as a candidate for a major party, but I certainly can as an independent. And as an independent in Indi, that means having a huge team of people on the ground supporting you, because it's pretty difficult, I've got to say. it's pretty hard yards to be out there day in, day out at candidates' forums, door knocking, really trying to engage with people on the ground and talk about policy issues. And, you know, I think it's, you know, as nurses, maybe we're not so good at selling our wares, so to speak. But if you're running for parliament, then you need to hide a little bit of humility and be prepared to speak publicly about what you're prepared to stand on and what you believe in, and why you think that you have the skills necessary to do that. So I would say don't be shy about it. If you think that you have something to offer in the political sphere, then you should absolutely go for it. Absolutely do that. And I would be most willing to have a chat to any nurse or midwife who was thinking about a career in politics. I'd be very delighted to do so.
Helen, just saying our final question for the episode today. 2020 is a huge year for being the year in the nurse and the midwife. What do you hope is accomplished this year for our profession?
Okay, so firstly, I would say congratulations to every nurse and midwife wherever you are, anywhere in the world. I'd say congratulations on choosing to join such an established and revered profession. Be proud of who you are and be strong in the knowledge that you contribute to the world, and be proud of the care and compassion that you bring to the lives of the people that you touch. I would say that my hope for the most exciting thing this year of the nurse and the midwife is that the world recognises the extraordinary knowledge and skills that nurses and midwives have. I would hope that every woman, pregnant woman, every woman giving birth has a skilled midwife with her, because the knowledge that a midwife brings and the care and compassion that she brings to the birthing space and the pregnancy space and early parenting is so important to the health and well-being of the mother and the child and the future, because we know that those first 1,000 days of life, that period during the pregnancy and birth, is crucial to how a child will go on and develop as an adult. So I think, especially for midwives, I hope that there is a midwife at every birth one day. That would be my hope and dream. And I think for nurses, I think that the skills and knowledge that nurses can bring in the preventative health space is so important, and an area that I'd like to see more nursing research and influence in. I'd also like to see the nurse recognised for the healing that they do spiritually and physically. I think that's, again, something that the world needs to know more about.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much for your time today, Dr. Helen Haynes.
It's a pleasure, Ben, and all the very best to you in your nursing career. And I know that you will bring good to the world. So good luck.
Thank you.